Hey everybody, it's Katie here. Please enjoy this installment of The Mank Files, and then stay tuned after for our recap to refresh your memory.
Can we talk about Twisted Faith?
Oh yeah, sure.
Okay.
Was it you guys who sent me the thing recently?
So, well, the thing with him being the worm, worm guy, he does these TED Talks in prison. He's very successful in prison.
Well, that's what rehabilitation is supposed to be about.
Yeah. So my favorite part of the episode is when you were explaining to Annette what a trust fall was, because she didn't seem to understand that it should not be done between her and the pastor, but her and her husband.
When if they were they in were marriage in counseling right, to get, yeah, it was.
And she was just shocked.
I felt very bad.
She was very sweet and innocent.
I felt very bad for all those women that were sort of taken in by him.
Yes.
I was very surprised at all of these women.
He must have this charisma.
This was a great book before it was a Dayline episode.
Oh, really?
Written by Greg Olson.
The guy that was interviewed on the show. He was great. I liked him a lot.
He's done a lot of true crime stuff. It was terrific. You know, when somebody says to you, you know, hey, God has a new plan, and it involves you having sex with me.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking that here in Los Angeles, you say, yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You know, in and around small town Washington State, I don't know, maybe that had a little more currency. I'm amazed that anybody fell for that anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Also, her husband stayed with her after she accepted the fact that God was telling her to drug their baby so that she could go have sex with the pastor.
Right.
So the husband was a very
little Benadryl.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And the husband stayed with her through that whole thing.
Okay. First of all, why people stay with other people? First of all, the idea that infidelity or a mistake should cause you to forfeit the rest of your relationship is a debate that's gone on for a long time.
Right.
And I'm not taking a side here, but I certainly do.
Drugging a baby is a little more.
Certainly do understand why people want to patch up their relationships and stay together,
despite
some terrible transgression by one or the other.
Yes.
You know, the question is what's better for them and for their kid down the road, and maybe it is to be together.
It's a personal decision.
I do understand that. I just will say that I thought what Nick Hackney was able to persuade people of was just astonishing.
Yeah.
Absolutely astonishing.
It was.
Do you think he was persuading the mother-in-law of his dead wife to have sex with him, or was she sort of an equal partner in that?
Oh, no. I don't think there's any. I don't think she was complicit. I mean, I think she's, you know, guilty of felony bad judgment.
Yeah.
That's about it.
We have to give her. Kimberly and I on our podcast actually spoke a bit about her giving. I can't believe she went on. I can't believe she came on and was interviewed. And this is
admitted to that.
That's impressive.
I think it was impressive. And it's part of probably, it may very well have been part of her sort of personal rehabilitation.
Right.
She may have felt I did something that I shouldn't have
Atonement.
Done.
Atonement.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to admit it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I didn't think about that. She probably, because it surprised me. I was like, oh my goodness, because that's a shocking moment when that happens. Yeah. Jaw dropper. Did you know it was coming? Were you shocked?
Oh, yeah. No, I knew about
it. Okay.
I knew that was the story. And I was wondering how much I was going to have to ask about it before it came out.
Yeah,
that
must be. Yeah.
This is a long ago
memory. It is.
This story is years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, I remember that pretty well.
It's so good, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember Sandy Glass? So she's the one who had these prophecies.
Right.
But do you, like, you would do this little shade where you would say, God told her that she needed a new car, and it was a good car.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm trying to
remember, we met with Sandy Glass.
Really?
The producer and I, Susan Leibowitz and I, met with.
Oh, was
we only ever got to see a picture.
We tried to convince her to go on TV and sit down, because we said, you know, this story is going to be, we said to everybody in that situation, which is this story is going to be about you.
Yeah.
To some extent. And it's going to be about things that you did and things that you're accused of doing and things that maybe you didn't do or that you have an explanation for.
Right.
And I will try and tell your story without your involvement. Mm-hmm. But you're going to like this a lot better if you're in it.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought about that. But she ultimately declined.
One more question about Twisted Faith.
Yes.
Pastor Biley, when he tells you that he has people in Africa who are currently bringing people back from the dead. They cut away and we didn't get to see your reaction.
Was that on purpose?
I've got my arms out now. I got nothing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He was, well, that's how he said, right? He knew that Nick was
guilty, right.
because he didn't want his wife raised from the dead.
He did not want a zombie wife. Yeah. Right. So he said, yeah. Right.
You well, said, clearly, well, he would, he said, sure. Right. And he said, yeah. No way. He said, no way.
No, he didn't want to do it. Yeah. Well, that's always how you know that someone is a murderer, when they don't want the suspect, when they don't want the dead person brought back.
Brought back from the dead. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's the giveaway.
It's so good.
Do you want to go into Patreon questions?
Yeah, let's do it. Do you have time?
Sure.
Amanda Moore wants to know, how are cases assigned? Is it by producer? Do you ever want a case that somebody else gets assigned?
Every now and then you do. You know, first of all, anything you've covered before, you're going to cover again.
Right.
So like when there's any kind of follow-up to anything or any sort of ongoing story. I mean, Keith, when the Durst thing finally goes to trial, it'll be Keith because he covered it before.
Oh.
You know, I did, you know, I don't know how many hours on the Michael Jackson cases.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I must have done 10, 11, 12 hours on that. Yeah. But I mean, over the years. I mean, from like 2003.
Oh, it's a lot. Yeah.
How they get assigned, frequently it's just who is available at a different time, because frequently we're all so slammed, and like they'll call and say, right. Can you be in, you know, Chicago next Thursday?
Uh-huh.
Because a case is going to, you know, there's just been a verdict and we need to like start interviewing people right away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'd love to, but I'm going to be in St. Louis, you
right.
know?
Right.
So that happens sometimes. We all have producers that we work with more than others. Although there's no law, I mean, anybody can work with anybody. But you know, there's about a dozen producers out here in the West. There's a guy who lives in Sacramento. There's a guy who lives in Phoenix. A guy who lives in Oregon. There's a bunch here in LA. And so we tend to work with those people. You know, Keith and I tend to work with those people more. But we both have. I mean, I'm about to start a story with a producer in New York who I've worked with before. So I mean, it's. A lot of it is who's available at the time that the story is assigned, and some of it is the partnerships that have developed over the years. I want to thank you both for having me on, and I also want to thank all of your listeners, because without all of you, we would not be what we are now, and we count on you, and we appreciate it, and thanks for watching, and thanks for following us on social and all the other great things that you do, and all the people who came to CrimeCon, including Claire, who was afraid to come up and actually talk to me.
And Lynn, who touched your hanky.
And Lynn, who touched my hanky. And that was a little frightening. I just want to say thank you to all of you. And we'll be on this Friday whenever this airs. And don't watch alone.
So good.
It was really exciting.
Hi, everybody. This is Kimberly.
And this is Katie. Nope.
Oh.
We messed it up.
Switch around. Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. This is Kimberly.
And this is Katie.
And you're listening to A Date with Dateline. So this episode is extremely special to me. It is called Twisted Faith. It is hosted by Baby Mankey. And it
baby
was...
Baby Mank?
Yeah.
Why do you say he's a baby?
Well, it was 8 years ago.
He looks exactly the same. Identical to what he looks like now.
Okay. You're so kind.
He does.
I think he looks like a baby.
Are you for real?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think that at all. Okay.
It's April 9th, 2010, season 18, episode 32, and this is religiosity gone wild.
Religiosity gone wild?
Yeah. My work husband, Greg, who's been listening to us, made a point to tell Katie and I that we were being very respectful about religion.
He had one note.
He did have a note that people that are, oh, I forgot what it was. Is it religious?
It's You're exactly what you just said.
Oh,
that's
shoot.
Why I'm laughing, because what you just said is what his note was. He didn't like religion as a whole.
No, he didn't like the word religious. He thinks...
No, it's that they become like...
He said religious people don't like the word religious because they think it sounds dogmatic and... like cultish.
No, it was Christian people didn't like the term.
Right. They think it sounds dogmatic or extremist or something. They just like spiritual.
They had a strong faith.
Strong faith.
That's what he liked.
Strong faith.
This is also his one opinion. I don't think everybody feels that way about the term religious.
Greg is also the person who told me that he didn't date girls with curly hair because he found the curly hair confusing and he didn't know what to do with it.
What are you talking about?
He said that to me.
Can I leave that in?
Yes, you better.
What you talking about, Greg?
He said,
what's confusing about curly hair?
He didn't know, like, can he put his fingers in it? Like, can he touch someone's
I'm
hair
sorry,
so if he's
because
dating?
It'll get stuck? What is he worried about? That it's like a bramble bush?
Yes, that is exactly right, that it would get stuck. Yes.
But then what happens? Then you just laugh and it's fun and it's cute and your hair got stuck in somebody's wild hair.
Well, he hasn't watched enough rom-coms where that happens, I guess. I don't think I've ever seen a rom-com where that happens. Where they're like, my hair is so curly and knotted that your fingers got caught in it.
Weirdly, the rom-com that came to my mind the minute you said curly hair, number one, okay, two rom-coms, but the first one that came to my mind was Forget Paris with Deborah Winger and Billy Crystal.
Oh my God. Does she have curly hair in that?
Yeah, but clearly that's not the first one that I should have thought of. I don't know why my brain went there. Clearly the Billy Crystal rom-com that my mind should have gone to is When Harry Met Sally, because Meg Ryan has the curliest hair in that one. But for some reason, for me, I thought Deborah Winger.
I was thinking it should be Sex and the City, even though that's not my favorite show, because I feel like they talk about her curly hair.
That's because you're such a Samantha.
Me?
Sorry, which one's Samantha?
The slutty one?
We are about to lose listeners right now because of my lack of Sex and the City knowledge.
Kim Cattrall is okay. Samantha. I am the farthest thing from Samantha.
Oh, yeah. No, you're not a Samantha. You're a Miranda.
Charlotte.
Miranda's real smart, right? She's a lawyer.
Yeah, but Charlotte's kind of the prude.
Okay, I got to think about this. What's Carrie? Who is Carrie?
I think she's
Carrie.
Whimsical and kind of messy with curly hair.
Oh, so I'm like a tall, sort of more masculine version of Carrie?
I mean, you can make yourself a Carrie.
If Sarah Jessica Parker got stretched out and then got a deeper voice, I'd be Carrie.
Sure.
I've tried to wear some weird stuff.
This might be what the people on the iTunes reviews were talking about when they said that we go off on tangents a lot.
Oh, okay. I'm stopping. I'm ready. All right. Show me the twisted faith. Let's talk about this episode because I think people are going to be really... I don't want to oversell it, but it is probably one of the best datelines I've ever seen.
So I just want to clarify. So because Sheila Davalou episode still stings a little bit that I built it up a lot and then you didn't love it. So this one you did love. It makes me feel really happy inside. I'm joyous.
Did you think I wouldn't love this?
Well, you didn't love Sheila Davalou and I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone where everyone has a pig nose, but I don't have a pig nose. And this episode, I was like, she has to like this. It's crazy. And then you did, and I was just so, so happy. It'll be like when I finally show you Buffy and you really like it.
Oh, we better hope I like Buffy. I feel like if I don't like Buffy, that's when the podcast will end.
Our friendship will be over.
Yeah, that will be it. Let's get back to Twisted Faith because we got to cover this episode and we're on a timeline.
Okay.
And we're going to stick to it, kind of.
I love when you're assertive. So this
episode.
I do. Oh, the phone's
ringing. What's that?
It's a landline. I'm at my aunt's house.
Who's got a landline?
My aunt. I'm at her house because of the Peter Pettigrews.
Let's explain to our listeners what a landline is. A landline is when you... Is there an answering machine?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I hope it's not a doctor.
Why would it be a doctor?
I don't know. What if it's a doctor with... You're pregnant. That would be really embarrassing. Like
my aunt is pregnant?
Wouldn't that be funny, though? Oh, it's just a...
This is why you should not have a landline, and my parents need to get rid of their landline instead of complaining about how expensive cell phones are. They should just drop their landline, because they get is telemarketers. Okay, this episode, we're at 18 minutes in, and we have not yet talked about the episode.
It's all
your
fault.
So let's go through this recap. So this episode takes place in Seattle. Supernatural, they called it. Super spiritual. That was my manky. So these people belong to a church and it's a very, I can't say the word religious because apparently that's offensive. What I was going to say to my work husband, Greg, is you said we were being fairly respectful towards religion, and he appreciated that. I wanted to say, check back in with us after this episode.
We said it. We mentioned it, that there was, that we were doing this episode yeah. that was heavy on the...
So they're super spiritual. They believed in hearing messages from God and prophecies. They sometimes spoke in tongues. These are...
This is a born-again Christian denomination. I don't know what it is. I don't think it's Baptist. I don't think it's... I don't know if it's a denomination of Christianity. I don't know.
It's cray-cray town. It's...
But they're very active in their worship.
Yes.
So when they worship, it's a lot of...
Animated.
Yes. So casting out the devil, calling forth the Holy Spirit, things like that. So yes. If you've ever been to a church like that... I used to have a boyfriend who his family was involved in a church called The Vineyard. And I think that might be a chain of churches in Southern California, or it might be countrywide. I'm not sure. But that's very much hands raised when you're singing praise songs, and then moving into the aisles, moving when the Holy Spirit moves Ooh. You to move, and then speaking in tongues goes along with that. By the way, just a side note so we can go into this. Everyone pretty much knows, has listened to the podcast, that I grew up in a pretty strict Christian home.
Yeah.
This is the opposite of what my dad liked in Christianity. My dad wanted hymn books and hymnals. He thought that it was all very showy. Yes. So no hands raised. No. None of that.
And your mom would be like, why are these people making a scene?
Correct.
Okay. Dawn, who's this episode is about. Who is this Dawn? She's
Dawn,
four.
Dawn, go away. I'm no good for you.
What?
Ooh, Dawn. If anybody out there feels me.
I don't know what that is.
Like a 60s song.
Okay.
About Dawn.
Okay. Dawn was 4 years old when she accepted the Lord into her life. Really? And
no, yeah, I don't. Yeah. No.
She Leave would. It. Quote scriptures to her parents at 4 years old. Okay. Doesn't that just seem like something you're doing because your parents taught you to do it? Do you think she really accepted the Lord Jesus Christ into her heart at 4 years old?
I don't personally think that, but I know that other Christians have stories that, yes, they did.
I'm very cynical.
It's, yeah. I mean, and most of the people I know were much older. You're looking at more, if you're a kid when you do it, you're looking at more like 8,
right.
9.
Right.
But, okay, 4.
Is
I don't
it,
know.
And is it like an event? Do they throw a party when you accept the Lord Jesus Christ into your heart?
No, you get dunked in water.
You have to choose that you've now accepted and then you get dunked in water?
You come forward at church. So that's what most people do, is they come forward. They have during certain sermons, they'll have a call at the end and you walk forward down the aisle and you accept Jesus into your heart. And it's like the church is excited for you.
But like if you haven't done it yet, would your parents be like, nodding, like pushing you, going, hey, you're behind the neighbor's kid.
Not except good parents.
Except soon.
But it's a very strange sermon. Those sermons are always very heavy. And usually you cry because it's so, so at a four-year-old level, I'm not sure how that works.
Gotcha. Have we mentioned I'm Jewish on this show?
I'm giving you a lesson. I'm giving you
all the
lessons.
I know, I really
lessons.
Appreciate it. Yeah, this I really is it. Appreciate it. Yeah. I did not know all of this. So Dawn was sweet and funny. And here's your pro tip if you're a Dateline guest. I need you to say a specific story that shows that someone was funny, because you can't just say they were funny and then Dateline shows a home video where they're wishing someone happy birthday. So I need you to say, like, she was obsessed with 2.5 men. And I'll be like, oh, okay, she was not funny. Or she once... she once like pulled my pants down in front of the whole school, and I'd be like, oh, she was mean funny. Or like, oh, she once switched everything out in my apartment and put it upside down out on the deck. And I'd be like, oh, she's funny. She's a prankster funny.
A note to self, what story am I going to tell to show that you were funny?
Okay. Maybe just submit this podcast as proof, except I'm not that funny on this podcast.
I didn't say it.
Some people say it. So she had a said. She had a
some, I can say that some people said she was funny on this podcast. Judge for yourself, Dateline listeners.
Others thought she was too much.
Others thought she was a bit much.
A bit much. Thank
Who said that?
Sky.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You're so mad at that still. I should never have told you that.
I know. I don't know why you did.
It was years ago.
I know. It still hurts. So she had a sixth sense. She would know when her best friend was up to no good, and she would call her and be like, stop what you're doing. And she met Nick. She called him a knight. She said he was a knight. We will see how much of a knight he turned out to be. They married, and he became a youth pastor. His sermons had people, he says, they open your prayer books and people are screaming like they're at a KISS concert. And he's like, get used to it, people. We are praising the Lord and changing lives. Like,
youth pastor.
He's such a showman.
Youth pastors.
And people are screaming like they're going to throw their...
They wield tremendous power.
Wow. So Nick felt like he was chosen by God, even as a child, because he was sick and his dad prayed over him. So he was taught at a young age that he was chosen by God. Then we meet Craig. What did you say?
I was just going to say, we know who is actually chosen.
Yes. Me.
Yeah, correct.
Then we meet Craig and Annette Anderson, who we have differing opinions about. Craig and Annette,
apparently,
who joined Nick's church, and they're very sweet and very soft-spoken, and we'll get more into them. So okay. They start sort of say their opinions about what's happening with Nick. This is where Josh Mankey gives some low-key shade that they suck at singing. He said their hymnals and their voices, and he said, albeit somewhat off key.
He did do that. Yeah. I thought that was kind of funny.
So Craig and Annette love Nick. They said he was funny and fun. Again, I'm not getting that from the audio. And from the picture, he looks like a dude who plays Call of Duty in his mom's basement and drinks way too much fruit punch after the age of 40. So Craig and Annette say that...
He's the one that goes to, like, the Arco and then fills up the fountain cup with the Hawaiian punch.
Correct.
And then his mouth is always kind of red.
Yes. Yes. Craig and Annette say that Nick and Dawn were a great young couple. But by 1997, Craig and Annette saw the church change. It became more separate from mainstream Christianity. They called it super spirituality. They said they were digging the demons out of you. And the nice, laid-back pastor that had founded the church had been pushed aside by this other pastor, not Nick, but this self-proclaimed apostle, Robert Biley.
Are we going to talk about him now? Okay.
Well, if there ever was an episode where a side character should also have their own episode, it's Robert Biley. I would say Mickey was one. And Robert Biley was the other, who could totally have their spinoff episodes.
Okay.
Well, first of all, he's a self-proclaimed apostle.
Well, first of all, why does every single self-proclaimed apostle or prophet look like Warren Jeffs? Mm. I need a breakdown and headshots. Actually, I need full body shots.
No, you don't want. No one
all
wants.
All of these self-proclaimed apostles look to be 6 foot tall men, very much on the thin side, with a very chiseled, thin face, small glasses. They all look the same.
Yes, that's true.
They're from the Warren Jeffs School of Prophecy.
What if that's what God actually looks like and is choosing men that are in his image?
I think God looks like Titus Andromachus.
Titus Andromedon?
Andromedon, whatever his name is. He looks like Titus. Noir. That's what God looks like to me. Come on.
Yes, with, no, like, I like robes. It. I love it. I love Titus. So his sermons, Robert Biley's sermons, lasted for hours, and people would speak in tongues. He was casting demons out of them, full-on exorcist style. You could be exorcised for anything that you did wrong if you went to a basketball game. Or a baseball game. Why? I'm not sure why. Why is a baseball game? It's America's sport.
Did they say that as an example?
They did. We meet this author who wrote a book about the case, and he is sassy pants, and I love him. And he says, you could be exercised for going to a baseball game. I didn't
know. Good times.
Is it the competition at the baseball games? Is it the tight pants? Is it the peanuts? Why is it so bad to go to a baseball game?
The shouting?
The shouting.
The cursing? Are you cursing at the umpire? F you, you ump.
You don't have to do that. That's not required. No. Children go to baseball games.
No, it's definitely not required. Oh, it's the beer.
I think it's the tight pants.
All right.
They wear pretty tight pants. Okay, so the church becomes more culty. They write down your secrets so that if you leave, they could spread gossip about you. Super shades of Scientology here.
Yeah.
So if you had, this is Annette and Craig are telling us that if you had what they called a demon of rebellion hanging on you, you needed to clean yourself and get rid of those.
Like Gorgons.
Is that Scientology?
What are the things that hang on you? Egons. Organs.
No. Thetans? Is that Thetans? No, is that the bad people? In Scientology, we all have aliens hanging on us.
And yeah, organs.
Did I say
that already? Do I keep saying that? Okay, yeah. Am I saying the same word?
Yeah.
Am I just saying organs, but then changing the vowels?
I don't remember what they're called.
The unfortunate thing is we've had this discussion on the podcast before and looked it up and figured it out, and I still can't remember it.
Darn it. Okay, so we're not totally up on Scientology, but this is what Scientology has also. So now Mankey gets to show his very skeptical side. He asks Craig and Annette, why would you stay? You know, why would you stay? And they really felt like, A, they wanted to be close to God and be clean, and B, they knew how shunned they would be if they left, and the church could spread rumors about them. So members of the congregation believed that God spoke to them directly, but none more than the church secretary, Sandy Glass. Remember that name for later. I think her son is Jan's boyfriend, George Glass, from the Brady Bunch.
George Glass. Was that surprisingly good? Is that why? Is that why you're laughing?
I'm so surprised. So Sandy Glass, all we have is the picture, and the picture is super Uggs.
Can we get one more shot of Sandy Glass so we can actually see what she looked like instead of some grainy surveillance photo or whatever we're getting of her that's like from 1973?
She looks like a teenage David Cassidy.
No, we need a better picture because there's got to be... We don't know what Sandy Glass looks like. We have one picture of Sandy Glass, and I did not do any research to look her up to see what she looked like outside.
Okay, so...
Well, I can't tell how old she is. She looks about late 40s in the picture in 73. So is she 98?
Yeah.
What's happening?
I think so. Okay. Maybe. You could be right, actually.
Is she an older lady?
I don't know.
Is Sandy Glass an elderly woman?
I don't know. That's a really good question.
Does she get a senior citizen discount at Chili's?
I mean, no shame if she does. I'm jealous.
Either that or something's happening.
Why is the phone ringing again?
Who is trying to call you?
God. Telling me that I am super sinning by saying all these
things.
Is
there a country song about God calling? Jesus called? Is there one?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I can send you I can post. Maybe I'll do it on Patreon. I'm going to do it on Patreon. I'm going to share the most special thing in the whole world on Patreon.
What is it?
It's this video. It's a YouTube video, and it's so amazing.
Hello. Holly Hancock here. I'm running for judge in seat 60 on Tuesday, June 5th. I hope to have your vote. I've been endorsed by the Los Angeles Times because of my many years in trial court. I am the only candidate who has the experience with the people who come before the bench. I have the legal knowledge, twice the appellate courts have agreed with me, and I have the necessary empathy to consider all possibilities.
Doesn't have the empathy to leave a short message.
Is this what's called a robocall?
Yes, it is. So,
was she running for a judge?
Yeah, I don't know. By the way, I keep leaning on this table and it's making kind of farty sounds, but it's...
Oh, please tell me no.
It's my arm on the table.
I do not want to cut that out.
Don't. Leave it. I don't care. So... Right.
Table farts for everybody.
Table farts.
All right. Continue on.
Mank throws so much shade at Sandy Glass and her hearing things directly from God. She was told by God that she needed a new car. So she got one and it was a good car.
Oh, you've got to be kidding.
That's what
God said. I need an Acura.
Yes.
Here I go.
That's what God told her. And Mank throws so much shade at it. I love it so much. She was visited by Angel Gabriel And the guy who wrote the book about this case points out that Gabriel appears in the Bible like twice. He foretold the birth of Jesus, and then he talked to this lady, Sandy Glass, in Seattle. He was napping in between. He was at Coachella. He got really into ska music for a while, and then he came back. But I don't know what he did. Why did he only appear twice, and then the third time was with Sandy Glass? That's how special she is. Sandy was told by Angel Gabriel that there would be a huge earthquake in Seattle, and the church members stockpiled thousands of dollars of supplies with their hard-earned money. And guess what? No earthquake.
Wouldn't then you be like, okay, maybe Sandy Glass is full of baloney?
I think they felt like she had misheard the message, or it was coming soon.
Who is she, though, in the church? She
is secretary.
She is the church secretary. Okay.
Yes.
Who also has a direct pipeline. She is the landline to God.
Right. But her hearing's not that great, apparently. Maybe he said somewhere else instead of Seattle that there was an earthquake. I don't know.
Are there earthquakes in Seattle?
No. So that's why you use a Q-tip. No, there aren't. Not yet. I mean, it could happen for sure. But
are they on a line?
Well, they're
a tectonic plate?
Much higher above Northern California. But still, when Northern California gets a big earthquake, I'm sure that, I don't know, Seattle might get aftershocks. I don't know how it works. But I don't believe they've ever had a big earthquake. No. So, but a lot of, because of climate change, a lot of places are getting earthquakes that have never had earthquakes before. True that. Look it up. So, but that's what I'm saying. That's why I use a Q-tip, which is a tie-in to our Patreon story, our update, because we have a little story about a Q-tip.
Did we talk about the Q-tip? Yeah, we did.
You brought it up, my Q-tip story. So David Cassidy's Sandy Glass hears something big from God. She is told by God that Nick, the youth pastor, his wife Dawn was going to die, and that Sandy was then going to be with Nick. She tells Nick this, and he replies, "I knew it." He knew. Okay. And he even tells sweet little Annette, "I'm going to go through something bad soon. It's part of God's plan. Don't freak out, girl. I'm going to get through this." So he is super pumped about this prophecy that Dawn, his wife, is going to die, and then he's going to be with Sandy Glass. But Nick and Dawn's marriage had some strain. Dawn was lonely because he spent so much time with people at the church. She was trying to lose weight because she felt like Nick had lost interest in her. Sweet baby Annette had seen her crying a few times. She had even had a complete breakdown at a baby shower. But, like, who hasn't done that? Nick starts to do marriage counseling at the church. He's, like, barely married. And he had a prophecy that his wife was going to die and that he was going to be with the church secretary. But he's the one they picked to give marital counseling advice. Good choice. So
we should also clarify that the only two people aware of what the actual prophecy is are Sandy and Nick. He never told Dawn, "You're going to die."
Right.
Yeah.
So I should say the guy that writes the book that's super sassy, he and Mank are just spilling the tea together. They're just gossip mode, and it's adorable.
Oh, yeah.
So sweet little naive Annette and Craig, they started getting marriage counseling from Nick, which was the worst decision they ever made. So surprise, surprise, apparently when Nick is counseling these couples, the man is usually kicked out of the room, and Nick spends his time alone with the women. This is my favorite. Nick thought that Annette needed to trust God more. So to demonstrate that, he had her do a trust fall with him, not with her husband, Craig, but with him, the youth pastor. And she describes it to Mank like she doesn't think he knows what a trust fall is, or that any of us know what a trust fall is, because apparently she was never in junior high or went to camp. But
you are saying this very judgy, like people should know what a trust fall is. This is not...
Everyone knows what a trust fall is.
Incorrect. You went to a theater school.
I knew it way before then, what a trust fall was.
I didn't.
It's when you lean backwards and someone catches you.
You fall backwards.
Yeah, you fall backwards and someone catches you. Now, Mankey goes, and he's trying so hard to be nice. He's trying not to smile. He says, usually in marriage counseling, the the counselor would have the wife trust fall onto the husband to build trust with your spouse and not with the counselor. You silly, silly, simple, sweet Annette. And he's really trying to control this smirk, but he can't really, and I'm here for it. And Annette just goes, wow. She had no clue. Wow. She had no idea that that's what the purpose of a trust fall was and thought it was totally normal. And then Mank kind of feeds her what was happening. And he says, it kind of seems like Nick was drawing you to him by promising you this closer relationship with God. And she's like, yeah, I can see that. She really has zero idea what has happened to her. So then we go and we meet the head pastor again, Robert Bailey, the self-proclaimed prophet. And he was getting complaints that Nick was spending way too much private time with a married lady in the church. And guess who that lady was? Sandy Glass. Mm-hmm. So Bailey goes to Nick, and apparently it's very important for Dateline to determine how quickly he spoke to him about this, because Mank is like, how quickly did you speak to him about it? And Robert Bailey goes, right away. And Josh goes, next day? And he goes, same day.
What? I missed that whole thing. Really? You. That's funny.
Thank you, Mankey, for clarifying how quickly he did it. He took it very seriously.
Okay.
But not, now we know. Not seriously enough to follow through, because he tells Nick to stop seeing Sandy Glass, and he does not stop seeing Sandy Glass.
You mean seeing Sandy Glass for marriage counseling?
No. He had been spending a lot of time behind closed doors with the married Sandy Glass, and it was causing a lot of rumors. Her husband was upset. We don't know what was happening.
Also in the marriage counseling process that Nick had been doing?
Was yes, but in the, again, the husband is usually kicked out of the room. So people are starting to talk. So Nick says he'll stop, but he doesn't stop. And Sandy is still getting prophecies that she's going to be with Nick. And now God is saying she's going to be with him sometime after December 18th. They are going to be together after something happens to Dawn on December 18th. And on December 19th, they can be together. Hanky asked Pastor Bailey, which keeps autocorrecting on my computer, to Bile. So just bear that in mind. Okay. I feel like that's important. Hanky says, do you think that Nick was somehow feeding these prophecies that Dawn was going to die to Sandy? And Bailey says there's another option, that she was being fed these prophecies by a demonic force that was speaking to her. And then they cut away, and unfortunately we never got to see Mankey's reaction to that.
So he said that she was being fed. Okay.
So basically Josh says, okay, do we think Sandy is making up these prophecies that Dawn is going to die and she's going to be with Nick? Or do you think Nick was somehow feeding these prophecies to Sandy? These are the earthly options. And Bailey says, well, there's a third option, which is that she was hearing prophecies, but they weren't coming from God. They were coming from a demonic force that is speaking to her. And then they cut away, and we don't get to see what Mankey's reaction was to that.
We also don't get to hear the end of that, because I guarantee you that demon had a name. And I'm sure that that conversation was 15 minutes longer. So we need to note that for future conversation with Mankey.
Yeah.
And say, What did he actually say? What was the name of? Did he name the demon?
Yes. Was it Lilith?
Has it been cast out?
Yeah. Sorry, Lilith. So
don't apologize to Lilith.
We got schooled on Lilith last time.
Yeah, we did.
So now Dawn, Nick's wife, she's starting to feel like something is going to happen to her. She starts saying things like, if I die, I'm good with God, which is very weird. But December 19th passes and she's still alive, or December 18th. So December 26th, the day after Christmas, Nick goes to the Nick leaves the house to go duck hunting. Does God approve of duck hunting for sport?
Sure.
Okay, I disagree. So Nick's house catches fire while he has gone duck hunting, and Dawn is killed. She is burned in her bed beyond recognition.
That is so sad.
It's terrible. Beyond
that
terrible.
That is horrifying.
Yeah. And she was a very sweet lady by all accounts. It's really sad. So here we go again with Pastor Bailey. I mean, This is where Byleaf should have his own episode. I can't believe you don't agree. He needs a spinoff, just like okay. Mickey. So Byleaf says he had church members doing work in Africa, bringing people back from the dead.
Mm.
Now, remember, this is Dateline. This is not Buffy, who died like 27 times and she was brought back and I was fine with it. This is Dateline.
Respawn.
I don't know what that means.
That's video games. That's what happens. You die and then you respawn.
Okay. Okay. Mankey wipes the smirk off his face. He is in profesh reporter mode. He proves once again why he's a champion. Because I would have fallen off my chair. Byleaf says that he goes to the scene of the fire and he's comforting Nick and he offers to bring Dawn back from the dead, basically. Mankey says, so Nick said, sure. But Byleaf says, Nick said, no way. Now, I don't feel like either one of those is an appropriate response to being asked if you want to bring your wife back from the dead. Because I feel like sure is what you say if you say, I'm going to Starbucks. Do you want me to get you a drink? Sure. And but I know Josh was just being Joshy. But if Nick really said no way, I don't like that either. Because I don't know if it was like, gag me with a spoon, no way. Or if it was like, did he wave his hand away? Like if someone offers you extra bread at dinner and you're like, no way, I'm good.
No.
And you wave your hand.
What? I don't understand why you're caught up on that fact and not the fact that he probably said no way, because if they're bringing people back from the dead in Africa, what's probably happening is a pet cemetery type scenario where the thing comes back, but it's not the same and it's got bad things attached to it. You brought it back from the dead and now it's kind of a demon zombie.
You're thinking of the bear hand, the bear paw.
And it has to
from that short story.
No, I'm not. I'm talking about Pet Cemetery, Stephen King, where you bring the pet back from the dead. And then it tries to murder you and your family, and you have to keep it locked in the basement. So, yes, he has his wife back, wife in quotes, but she's evil.
Okay.
And she has to stay in the basement. So he doesn't want her back.
I don't think he watched a lot of Stephen King. And
I don't know.
I don't think that that's why, but I believe that the impression Byleaf got was he just didn't want his wife back.
Mm-hmm.
He just was like, no thanks, I'm good. I'm all good. It's okay. If you go to Starbucks, I'll have something. But I'm okay right with you not bringing her back. Dawn's death is ruled an accident from a space heater, and Mank starts to ask Sweet Annette, what did you think about Dawn dying? And she says he says to her, did you see that Dawn died as kind of proof that Nick really was getting these prophecies? Because he had said something bad will happen to me. And she goes, yeah.
Oh, boy.
I'm starting to think that Annette is not the sharpest tack. The brightest bulb. So Annette offers to help Pastor Nick with the insurance paperwork. So they're working together. And this is only a couple weeks after the death. And he says, what would you do if I said I wanted to run you upstairs and make mad passionate love to you?
Barf.
Disgusting.
Barf.
With his Kool-Aid mouth. So
yeah.
She says she thought it was grief talking. So she kind of was like, no, stop that. Nick keeps pushing it. And the next couple weeks, he keeps telling her that God has a new plan for him. God is up to something new, and it involves the two of them boning. She says, no, I'm married. And he says, that's just an excuse to take a risk to perform a real act of Christian love.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
God wants you to have sex with me. Don't say no to God, Annette. God wants you to give me physical comfort. So she agrees to meet Nick at a hotel, a Ramada, and Mank is in shock. He says, what's that like? Fun, sexy, intriguing? And Annette is kind of traumatized, and she says, no, it was a huge mistake, the biggest mistake of my life. But she keeps doing it for, like, months. Bear in mind, in this whole interview, Annette's husband, Craig, is sitting right next to her, supporting her.
Thank you. Thank you. I was just going to say it.
He
the whole time.
Yes. I mean, he's an angel.
Speak up, Craig.
He says Speak nothing. Up. He like pats her comfortingly.
He does.
Yeah.
So I think he just feels like he treats her like a victim. Like she was taken advantage of, which is actually the right way to handle that.
I think so, too. I think he's an angel. And I feel really bad for him and her. I'll get a little more into that later. But Nick is not just doing this to Annette. Nick is coming on to every woman in the congregation. And as the book writer says, he's getting a lot of takers. He is spending time with Sandy Glass, who is now broken up with her husband after counseling with Nick. There's another chick whose husband had left after counseling with Nick. Then there's, remember the old head pastor who got pushed away because he wasn't speaking to demons enough or whatever, exercising people enough?
Yeah,
because
there were three original pastors, right? Yeah, there's Nick Biley and then
And this
Bob
other guy, Bob,
yeah,
who founded he founded the church. He was fairly traditional. He was not that outlandish, the screaming, the chanting, the exercising, the speaking in tongues. So his 19-year-old daughter was doing a missions trip in Africa, and Nick is sending her naughty emails that say things like, God desires to touch you.
So she's bringing back bodies from the dead in Africa and then getting sexy emails from mouth-breathing fruit punch Nick.
Maybe pics of his you-know-what.
Who is way older than her.
Way older
than 19.
Way older. And his wife just died. And he's
there's a glaring omission here that we're going to get to, but I'm just saying.
Okay.
There's something that's missing in this picture. We'll see if you figured it out.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of things missing, like common sense. But
yeah. Well, that's true.
There's something else. Okay.
Also, condoms, I feel like we're missing. I hope they weren't missing.
Were they
using protection?
No. That's the thing that's missing. There are no offspring happening in this situation.
Maybe he was using condoms.
So, or when they're not talked about, we'll get to it. I have a theory on it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, sweet, simple Annette is now having sex with Nick on a regular basis. And here's a good thing that happened. One time, Annette says she can't meet him because she has to watch her baby, speaking of offspring, her baby with her husband, Craig. And what does Nick say so that she'll come to the hotel? Give the baby cold medicine. Annette's reaction is, yeah, that was bad. And at this point, Annette's long-suffering husband, Craig, squeezes her leg in support.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Did she do it?
She did. No,
she did do it.
She did do it. She did do it. I don't like babies that much, but I don't support drugging them. I just want a hot take from Kimberly. Let's make that clear. Hubby, don't squeeze her leg at that point in the interview. But seriously, get yourself a man who supports you after you drug your baby so you can go sleep with your pastor. That is relationship goals. That's support. He's like the Wonder Bra of support. What is that quote?
I don't know what you're doing.
He's like the Wonder Bra of friends.
What's that from?
Mean Girls?
I don't know. You're stealing it.
Okay. That's okay. Yeah, I'm definitely stealing it. So Nick is going on what Mank calls the circuit of sympathy. And the sassy author calls it the sympathy tour. Which made me laugh because I felt like it was the 2009 Sympathy Tour. They have the best merch and production value, sold out venues. Get yourself a t-shirt. Nick is sleeping his way around the church, including, now Mank has to give us this clarifying. He says, you heard that right, after they say what he's about to say. You heard that right. So listeners, listen up. He's sleeping around, including, you heard that right, Dawn's mother. His dead wife's mother. Now, I don't know if that's not an OMG moment. I don't know what is. She's the mom. She's old. It's all kinds of ick that, like, he did something with his mother-in-law's Clovis. And
so the mother, Diana, has been interviewed this entire time. We probably should have built up to that. That you have seen her along this episode being interviewed about her daughter Dawn and about Dawn. And so when they drop this bomb that Diana also fell prey to Nick's sexual wiles, it's unreal.
She looks because she like...
She's a mom.
She's a mom. She looks like she's, I don't know how old.
60s?
60s. Maybe older.
Maybe 60. Older.
She looks like a woman who quilts, which is
scrapbooks.
Fine. Again, I do both of those things. I don't quilt, but I knit and things like that. But
she looks like she might have trouble driving at night.
She definitely needs extra help driving at night.
Yeah, she is a mom of grandma age.
Yes.
She could easily be a grandma.
Yes, and he sleeps with her.
And he goes after Diana.
So the the way that they're dealing with this on Dateline is so good because the author is listing all the women that Nick slept with and Mank interrupts and says, and Dawn's mother. And the author goes, yeah, that was really hard. And I don't know if he's saying it was hard for him to write about in the book because he was too busy vomiting.
Yes.
Or it was hard for Dawn's mother, or if it was just hard on the human spirit.
Yeah. Yes. So number one and number three.
Okay. Yes. So Dawn's mom willingly sleeps with Nick multiple times after her daughter dies.
Oh my gosh. What's happened? This is not, first of all, we are not in, I want this to be in a remote area.
No, it's outside like Seattle.
I want it to be somewhere where there aren't a lot of people, aren't a lot of churches. This is the only church in the area. We are talking about this is going on in a major metropolitan area, and these people are being bamboozled by a
mouth breather.
He is. He's a classic mouth breather. There's not, the picture we see of him is just, you know who that kid is.
Yes. So Dawn's mom was grieving, and she says it was their way of grieving together. It gets worse, people. She says she hoped that she could be Dawn for him since he missed her daughter. Like, she could make love to him the way her daughter did, and I'm vomiting in my mouth.
I seriously, I have a headache. I can't. Because I need to take an ibuprofen.
It gets so much worse. So she gives this romantic gesture of, let me be with you the way my daughter was. Because barf. I know you miss her. And guess what Nick says? He says, no, I don't want you to be Dawn. I want you to be yourself.
I'm going to lose my mind.
I mean, it would be a good line if it wasn't so disgusting.
No, it's not a good line.
But here's my problem. So first, he doesn't want Dawn brought back from the dead. And now he doesn't want someone to pretend to be Dawn in bed. Did he even like Dawn at all? He would rather have sex with full-on Dawn's mom. Knowing that it's Dawn's mom, she's being herself. She's not pretending to be Dawn. She's not like wearing a wig.
Who is probably the same age as Nick's mom. So it's basically Nick having sex with his mom. It's super Oedipal. And
yes.
Now we're...
But he would prefer that than her pretending to be someone much younger and someone who he actually married in his generation. But I do want to take a step back. I want to say, as gross as this is, I do think that Dawn's mom is really brave for going on the show.
Absolutely. And talking about it. I cannot believe she went on Dateline.
I would never.
Never.
Annette also, and Craig, I mean, they're opening up their dirty laundry and their greatest shame.
They are going to get judged with a capital G.
We are judging. I am full on judging. Did you say capital G?
Capital J. Yeah, and I had to think about it,
too.
Was
that a joke?
No, I stopped and was like, G. G isn't the right letter. It's J.
I thought you were doing a joke, like a quote from something.
No, this episode is making me dumb.
Yeah,
it's making
it is.
Me lose my marbles. It's infuriating because it's cult mentality almost that they're so dedicated to the church in a way that's so unhealthy.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. This is
that all of these things sort of fly out the window and this becomes normal. Mm-hmm. It's not normal. Are you out of your mind?
Right. But now in hindsight, they believe that it was wrong. Annette and Dawn's mom both feel horrible about what they've done. Annette was becoming really depressed and feeling guilty. She was almost suicidal about what she was doing with the pastor. Her husband thought she was depressed over Dawn's death. It's just, it's a whole cluster F. So finally, Nick decides that he wants to marry one of these very special church ladies that he's been sleeping with. And he stops sleeping with everyone else. He's going to marry this one lady. That doesn't make Sandy Glass very happy.
Who also was married. and then got marriage counseling from Nick.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden, Nick's going to marry. Yeah.
Yes. So it's been a couple years now, and he's been sleeping with just that one gal. Annette finds out that Nick was also sleeping with Sandy Glass that whole time. And she finally, years later, puts two and two together and is like, hey, maybe God didn't want me to sleep with my pastor. And she tells her husband what happened. This is a couple years out. She tells Craig, I slept with Pastor Nick. So Craig feels like his wife is a victim, and he sets up a meeting with Sandy Glass and the old pastor guy whose 19-year-old daughter was being flirted with by Nick. And mm-hmm. It's now been 3.5 years since Dawn died. Sandy Glass finds out about this meeting that's going to happen. She's been invited to this meeting. And she figures out that Craig is on to Nick. So she hires a lawyer and she goes to the police. She tells the police that, yes, she was sleeping with Nick while they both were married. And that they were even looking at wedding rings. Ew.
Barf.
She was having these prophecies that Dawn was going to die on December 18th. On December 19th, Nick called her in tears because God hadn't kept his word. So Sandy, So Sandy conveniently has another prophecy. Shocker. God tells her, tell Nick that his hands are no longer tied, which they take to mean that Nick has permission to do God's will. His hands are no longer tied. 8 days later, the fire kills Dawn. Later that day, Nick calls Sandy Glass and says, it's done. Now they can be together. She's basically a murderer. Pastor Biley, who knew that Nick was up to some shady stuff with Sandy Glass, said nothing to the police when the fire happened. So they just thought her death was an accident.
It was ruled as an accident.
Yes.
It was ruled by everyone as an accident. It was freezing cold. They were having house construction in their house. It was really normal for him to set a space heater. And then he said it caught the construction materials on fire. It was something very specific. He had a very specific way that it had happened.
But there was no smoke in her lungs.
Correct.
So it appeared that she died before the fire.
So now why didn't that,
exactly.
Why was that then still ruled an accident? Did they not do an autopsy?
No, that's how they found that there was no smoke in her lungs.
But when did they do the autopsy? 3 years later?
No.
This is my
They
question.
Found that out right at the time of the fire. But because they didn't know anything about the affair with Sandy Glass or anything shady, they just believed it was the fire, the heaters, and I don't know, incompetent police. Mark it off your bingo cards.
But that's frustrating because obviously if they're doing an autopsy, they think it's foul play, right? Because the body is burned so badly.
Well, not necessarily. Sometimes they do it as just a matter of routine, I think.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so Sandy says that Nick told her the story of what happened. So he had gotten this prophecy that his hands were no longer tied. He's laying in bed with his wife, and he hears God say, take the land, which he took to mean, go for what you want. Take the land.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to say that to you next time.
Did you? You know it's not take the land, right?
No, what is it?
It's take the lamb.
No, I think it's land.
No, it's lamb. L-A-M-B.
I thought it was land. I thought it was like seize what belongs to you.
Like, what is this, Oklahoma?
Yes.
Take the land.
Yes. I think you're wrong.
L-A-M-B. Meh. Lamb. Abraham. Lamb.
Look at this. Look. I'm looking it up.
And if your subtitles say land,
no.
It's wrong.
Listen to this. Church sermon series called Take the Land. Time to Take the Land sermon by Mark something. Caleb quoted the people and said, we should go up and take possession of the land. You are in possession of the land and settle it. There's a sermon here called Take the Land.
Okay, go ahead and look at Take the Lamb.
Let's take the land. There's a hymn. Let's take the land that God has given us. Be strong and take it, for we can make it.
It can't be. It's take the lamb.
Take the Back the Land. It's an American organization.
Okay, stop
that's
that.
Something take about homeless people.
Can you
people.
Please Google Take the Lamb?
Yeah. I'm getting a lot of videos on how to debone a leg of lamb. If any household is too small for a whole lamb, they must share one. That's from Exodus.
It's got to be
how
lamb.
To care for a rejected lamb. Leg of lamb recipe.
All right.
Stuff about Passover and the shank of lamb. The lamb leg, whatever. I believe I was right. And that you, Christian lady, laughed in my face for like 20 minutes. That might be a little long, but that's how long it felt. Take the land. It's all these videos. Take the land. Here, Joshua, part one. Take the land. There's a sermon right there. It's freaking take the land.
I've never heard that before in my life.
I'm so sorry, Katie, because I know
well,
you
the Lamb
don't...
of God, the Lamb of God is like a whole thing.
Yes, but they specifically said, I think in the video, that it was about Israel taking back, I don't know, it was some, they said it in the Dateline episode. They said, Josh Mankiewicz did a voiceover, he said, referring to so-and-so, Moses, whoever, taking the land that was rightfully theirs, or whatever it was. Take the land. He even referred to it, land.
I did laugh in your face. I apologize.
For like an hour. Again,
yeah,
that might be a long a stretch of time, but it felt like an hour. And I'm sorry that I'm right once again.
Oh, I'm going to be really upset.
Are you finding that I was right and that you were wrong?
It's take the land. An Old Testament phrase used urging Jews to take Palestine. So not only are you right, it's in association with your peeps.
Thank you.
And I totally thought it was Take the Lamb, and I may have had a title based around lambs.
And you laughed in my face.
I laughed in your face.
Like,
I am
so meanly.
Apologies all around. It was not mean. It was joyous because I thought I was so right.
I know.
You misheard.
You really want to be right one of these
and
days.
And you were a dummy. And instead, you're, again, much smarter than me.
No, again, you solved the escape room. I would have died in that thing.
I feel like I'm back in May. Are we in May again?
No.
Is this May all over again?
No, it's June. It's June 3rd, so we're good.
Okay. We're fine in June.
Yeah.
We'll be okay in June.
Yeah. Okay. Going back to this. Okay.
Sorry. Taking the land.
He heard God say, take the land, which he took to mean, go for what you want, do it. And Sandy had told him, God said, your hands aren't tied. So he overdoses Dawn with Benadryl. Which is so doubly disturbing when you think about how he told Annette to drug the baby with cold medicine. That's so disturbing. That baby could have died. It's so gross. So that he used the same thing. And they do an autopsy and there was a ton of cold medicine in her bloodstream. And again, there was no smoke in her lungs. But again, it didn't raise any red flags. So Sandy says that Nick admitted to her that he then suffocated Dawn with a plastic bag and then sets the house on fire.
So he's a straight up
killer. Yes. So they arrest Nick, who but again, how is Nick getting all these ladies? And even the cop, the policewoman, is like, him? How is this happening? Like,
yeah.
He must be really charismatic in person. I don't even know.
Youth pastor requires immense charismaticness.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that's a word I can coin.
Sure. So Sandy makes a deal with police so that she is safe by telling them all this.
Okay.
They make themselves feel better.
By safe, you mean safe from prosecution.
Correct. And the police make themselves feel better by convincing themselves that Sandy wasn't the mastermind, that Nick was manipulating her. And Dawn's mother is super angry at Sandy because she feels like this whole thing happened because she instigated it. But Dawn's mom, still very spiritual, doesn't believe that Sandy made up these prophecies. She believes that she did hear these things, but like Biley said, they were from the devil, which I think is BS and letting Sandy off the hook. I think we all should come to the conclusion that Sandy is either evil and just made up all this so she could be with the guy she loved, or cray-cray and is hearing voices and needs medication.
Mm-hmm.
Does that seem valid?
Yeah.
I think she was totally doing this for her own self-good because she wanted to be with the pastor.
I think she's a psychopath.
Okay.
I think she's messing stuff up on purpose.
I do too.
Bored and yeah, and using
because
you know,
these
Christianity
prophecies
in a way that's yeah,
yes, and they come so coincidentally, like right when they're supposed to,
right?
You know,
of course. Convenient,
yes,
prophecies,
correct. So Nick is found guilty. Craig and Annette, thank God, have somehow stayed together over the years. Craig is a saint. He totally forgives Annette, and they found another church. But in a very non-Annette way, she says something very astute. She says she realizes that church is a place where people can get absolute power, and that absolute power corrupts and can be mm-hmm. very dangerous. So she's mm-hmm. very wary of that. And it seems like Annette is perhaps a little smarter after this ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
Hanky and the author of the book, they talk about how these church people, their only sin was just being too trusting. Even though the Bible, doesn't it say beware false prophets? And
yes,
that's literally exactly what happened to them.
Yes.
Okay. So Mankey says it's amazing to him that Craig and Annette haven't lost their faith. And that
right.
And then Annette just has to kill me one more time by being a total dope. She says, right on. And that's how the episode ends. And I was like, I was rooting for you, Annette. We were all rooting for you. And then you say, right on. But I still like her. And I still think she's brave for being on the show.
Yeah.
Okay.